government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. So nice to have you all with us on this June the 19th on the West Coast, now June the 20th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Well, lots going on, and while I speak to you from the studio, there's one monster of a thunderstorm passing overhead, and hopefully we'll stay on the air, won't get knocked off by lightning or something like that, or even something worse. It's definitely going to rain, I can tell you that. Thunder's rolling for a minute to a minute and a half without stopping, with a 1 or 2 second pause in between the next thunderbolt and thunderclaps. Exciting on a Friday night, to say the least. That's the night when they play the spooky movies. And speaking of spooky movies, we've got one going on in Washington, don't we? It's been going on for years, and it's really coming to the final scene, I think. But we have great indication from around the world that people are not only waking up, they're responding to the message on this show. They're responding to the message of Dr. Rebecca Carley, who was on Drew Rain's show this evening, and the message of Dr. Kasem Khalil and Rick Adams on Republic Broadcasting, and many, many other people who are phoning into these shows to share what they're finding out, what they're discerning. What's kind of interesting, and tonight's guest, before we bring him on, I just want to share with you that he thought it might be worth mentioning a little bit about the demise of GM and how it's going to put, or is putting, dealerships out of business. They're going bankrupt, or they're having the dealerships, which they paid for, taken away and given to minorities for free. And I think this is something that not only outrages the workers of companies like GM, and GM is the company that's doing this, but I see a dichotomy in these dealerships in that they're also selling foreign cars. If you're for GM, and by the way, GM is not an American company. They happen to build cars here in America or North America, but they never were owned outright by any entity here in the United States. And it's the same with Ford. And you can presume all the other auto manufacturers. This is why the oil industry has such a handle on their part of the game. If you do some research, and I've even written about this to some extent in my research on Barack Obama, because as I was researching the Dunham clan, I went into a little bit of the history of how the Virginia Company, the New England Company, were put together, and I discussed George Bayshore, who was originally the French paymaster named Georges Payser, and Louis, the heir to the throne after George III, who became later Louis Payser. Louis Cass Payser took over many of the companies, and those companies are known like GM, Boeing, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Ford, on and on. These huge mega corporations that we know and think are American companies are part of the game that's being played. Now, we got a bigger game being played today, and we're going to talk about this with tonight's guest and other issues as well. He is my regular Friday night guest and co-host, especially when I get knocked off the air. He takes over and does an admirable job. He's a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and our good friend and science advisor here on Evident Footprints Friday nights, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Don. How are you this evening?
Well, I'm okay as long as the thunder stays away, you know, knock the mic off the stand kind of thing, you know. you had mentioned to me earlier this evening, off the air, of course, having heard something on C-SPAN. And for those that don't know what C-SPAN is, that's the government channel. But it's a service to folks that want to watch the goings on of Congress and the Senate. And they have C-SPAN 1, which handles the House of Representatives and the appropriate propaganda shows. And then the other channel, C-SPAN 2, has the Senate on there and whatever propaganda they choose to put out. I don't know which one you were watching. It doesn't really matter. C-SPAN would suffice. But why don't you share with the listening audience, Jim, what you told me that you had heard?
Well, it was pretty amazing. I was actually just channel surfing. I came to C-SPAN without having any knowledge of what was on there. And just as I got there, this gentleman stood up and... You know, they went through that rigmarole. The other guy yielded to this fellow who had a few minutes of time and wanted to make an announcement. And I just paused instinctively as he stood up to see what he was going to say. And he introduced himself as a senator from, or a congressman from somewhere. I wish I could remember which guy he was. But the important thing was that he said that... He said, the things that are going on lately, he said, in Washington are really becoming abusive, in his opinion. And he said that all of us have taken oaths to uphold the Constitution of the United States against enemies, both foreign and domestic. And he said, nowadays, there are more domestic enemies than there are foreign enemies. And he says, it's about time we do something about it. And that was really all he said, and it stunned me, I'll tell you. I wish I could remember who the gentleman was, but my hat's off to him anyway. At least he had the nerve to stand up and make that statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what will come of it,
but it was
pretty interesting.
You've gotten to hear me rant for some time on this show, and I certainly have taken up many Scientific Friday nights ranting about what's going on with all the theft and embezzlement in the trillions of dollars. And so you're hearing you're having heard this, and then bringing this information forward confirms what I've been saying. Now, I came across a piece. It's not often that I get something off of Prison Planet, but it's kind of interesting because this supports what you were just describing. And I think to an extent, it might have been Dick Durbin. Does that name sound familiar?
I would have to excuse myself entirely from remembering the name at all. You know, I was just mm-hmm. so stunned at what he said, and it was so short, I didn't catch the name.
Okay. Like to read just a couple of paragraphs out of an article published by Paul Joseph Watson and Steve Watson. I don't know if they're part of the Watson Five or they're that's just an inside joke. They're playing the Jackson Five story tonight on TV. So they usually write stuff for Alex Jones. This was dated Thursday, June 18th, yesterday. President Obama's plan to give the privately owned and unaccountable Federal Reserve complete regulatory oversight across the entire U.S. economy, which is likely to be enacted before the end of the year, will officially herald the beginning of a new form of government in the United States, an ultra-powerful banking dictatorship controlled by a small gaggle of shadowy and corrupt elitists. Now, there's quite a bit after that, but I want to highlight a point that he makes when he goes into a bit of a discussion about who the players are. And this is something I have been reporting for quite some time. And if it weren't for the fact that the New York Times recently criticized what's going on, as if they're trying to ease into this topic because their bubble's about to burst, in light of that, a few have shown a bit of courage to bring out some of this pertinent information. But you'll recognize all of these companies. He goes on later in the article to say, as we reported earlier this month, heads of nine of the biggest banks in the derivatives market, and you've heard me talk about that, including J.P. Morgan, Chase, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and Bank of America, secretly lobbied to keep derivatives under Federal Reserve oversight and away from real scrutiny. Now, one bank they're not mentioning is the LaSalle Bank in Chicago. And who do we know who's from Chicago? In fact, on Walter Burian's top 10 list, they're way up there. And the assets that J.P. Morgan I think J.P. Morgan was at the top of Walter's list. They had $90 trillion in assets. And these banks are getting bailout money. Think about this. You know, this money is even going to foreign countries, which is absurd, okay? But remember what I said about who owns these corporations. You see, like GM, for example, and on and on. And this goes back to the days of Abraham Lincoln, I'll tell you, Jim. So this is a great article. I'm going to post this on my site, at least the link to that. But it, by the way, it's called Obama Regulatory Reform Plan Officially Establishes Banking Dictatorship. And the Watsons, by the way, are from England. Paul Joseph Watson is in England. So it's interesting that somebody from England has to write an article telling us what's going on here in the United States.
Well, if I might interject something.
Sure.
As long as you're mentioning all these things, and this is something I was actually going to bring up to you on the last show, but we got off on a tangent and it completely slipped my mind. Obama has also introduced a bill, or somebody in his clutch has introduced a bill to suppress or remove the 22nd Amendment from the Constitution. And the 22nd Amendment, for those who don't know what it is, let me read it to you. I have it right in front of me.
Sure,
it says,
go ahead.
No person shall be elected to the office of the president for more than two terms. No person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected president shall be elected to the office of the president more than once. And it goes on from there. But the point is, once that's out of the way, Obama can be on his little throne ad infinitum. And if that gets passed, folks, you got some real serious problems in this country. Don't mind telling you.
Well, we know that the Bush cabal tried pulling the same thing, even up to a few days before the inauguration. And, you know, I feel very uncomfortable using words like president and inauguration because we're talking about a total stooge. I mean, I appropriately entitled my serial article, the Three Stooges go to Washington, because there's nothing real about these people. Absolutely nothing. They're just contrived out of, like a Federal Reserve note. It's the same thing. You want to, and they're instruments of debt, just like a Federal Reserve note. And they're counterfeit, as counterfeit as a Federal Reserve note. Oh, well, we could go on and on and on about that, Jim, but I know there were so many other things that we wanted to talk about last week, which you just mentioned a moment ago, and I want to give you that opportunity. But this is Evident Footprints, and footprints go in every direction, and sometimes, you know, we have to follow those footprints. So we may go off on a tangent, but we always come back to the straight path.
Well, the only thing that I felt it was our duty to mention these things, simply because of the fact that the wake-up process has a certain hysteresis associated with it. And unfortunately, the time lag between the wave of change inaugurated by Obama and the wake-up call that's slowly making its way through America is pretty significant. And so anything that we can do to close that gap, I think it's our duty to do it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you recall the show that we got recorded on the 29th of May, which ended up going into a video. And how's that for a segue? hopefully you got a chance to look at that video. Were you able to see, or go to my site and see the photos? Were you able to do that at all?
I went to your site, and I had more trouble than I've ever had before trying to tune in on it, and it kept bumping me off. And finally I gave up, to be honest with you. And this week I have been so busy that I didn't have a chance to try again. But I'm aware of the fact that you were having some problems with your site and the amount of traffic that you were trying to contend with. So hopefully that's been rectified.
Yeah. It's welcome traffic, and yet at the same time, you know, it becomes a curse because there are so many people trying to see the same thing, and I guess the servers can only handle so much. And, you know, I tried telling the folks that are on dial-up, for example, to give it some time to download. It's going to take a long time to download because of the nature of dial-up. But once a good portion of it downloads, you can start watching it, and it'll all be downloaded as you're listening to it, but you've got to give it a few minutes to get ahead, especially when that many people are listening and watching the video. And I put a reduced, compressed version on the website so that it wouldn't take so long. Now, it's a sacrifice in quality. I can tell you that I had the medium size up there, but that's part of the reason why the bandwidth got consumed, is the file is 10 times the size of the one that's there now in terms of memory. So that's more data to wait to download, too. So
sure.
It's a little faster, a little less quality, but to see the pictures, they're on the photos pages, folks. So you can click on photos and give that a moment to download, because there's a lot of really crystal clear photos there that are larger than the average photos that you see flying around the internet. And they're reduced in size. They're not humongous, but there are enough of them that it can slow down the loading procedure, we'll call it. And you've seen that when you click on YouTube or Google. I really don't like watching YouTube for that reason, because so many of the videos take so long to load into those players, and you're sitting there and sitting there and sitting there, and nothing responds. The internet's so slow these days, especially, you know, on those types of sites. But that said, we were advised to stay on the path that we're on, if you remember. Now, that's not somebody telling us.
I remember,
yeah.
And I think that we were on a really wonderful roll that night. Of course, we had a surprise guest, and, you know, it led to a lot of interesting things. And the reason that I've been so busy lately, to be honest with you, is I have just been so animated to return to some of my earlier work involving Dynaflux and related subject matter. And, you know, it's a really strange thing sometimes, Don. You know, I've been trying to solve the problems associated with that phenomenon for over 20 years. And sometimes you just got to put certain things aside from sheer exhaustion, not to mention the fact that there's no financial support. And then the next time you go back and a year later or 6 months later and you pick something up, as much as I hated to put it down, sometimes it's worthwhile. You suddenly see something that you didn't see before, or you realize something. I guess even in my own consciousness, there's an evolution occurring. And all of a sudden, you know, I started reviewing certain aspects of the magnetic work. And all of a sudden, I was just catapulted into another realization. And I started trying to solve some really hairy derivatives that I've been working on. And all of a sudden, I just saw how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things where it's a real tedious manual calculation, but when it was finished, you know, it was well worth the effort. And now I'm looking forward very eagerly to obtaining a new oscilloscope that I'm interested in getting a hold of, because it has certain analytical qualities that my older equipment didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And once I get that, I'll be able to literally digitize actual readings from the machinery and then take those answers and put them into a database that I'm forming, which will be capable of being analyzed with some special wave analysis software. And I just feel that I'm going to have a breakthrough in terms of the mathematical modeling of this concept. And I can't wait to get into that. I'm hoping that my internal feelings will be realized in reality, which would be very exciting. And one of the things that it's exciting about all of this is you know, these various topics that we've been discussing, particularly about the various types of ships that cruise around in our atmosphere and around our planet, you know, they're controlled by electromagnetic forces, which all are related to some of the work that I'm doing. I already know that because I understand where it leads. And it's all a question of consciousness, and it's all a question of, you know, realizations about very small aspects of science, the science of magnetics and dynamics, which are essentially, it's not that they're not known about, it's just that they're overlooked or ignored for certain aspects of their reality. You know, it's almost like saying, well, we've got a Taylor series here with 9 terms, and 7 is sufficient, so let's just erase the last 2. Well, in doing that, you may not change the answer from a practical point of view, but you change it enough that you no longer look in the direction that you might have investigated and perceived something totally different, and it's that kind of a thing. So
yeah.
Anyway, I'm excited about some of the things that are happening, and one of the things that I find not only interesting but almost a little bit confusing, and I'll share that with you, is I'm pretty well plugged in to a lot of the things that are happening in various scientific corners. A lot of stuff is going on in alternative medicines. a lot of stuff is going on in power generation and alternative energy sources, and a lot of stuff is going on in the production of nano engineering features. And all of this stuff that's happening, you would almost have to categorize under a heading of progress. And yet, simultaneously, you've got an unearthly deluge of scum, which is attempting to churn up the waters and make the earth into an even worse place than it has been. And these two things are happening almost simultaneously. And it's almost like we're being given an incredible choice, you know, like a bifurcated path, that if we take the right-hand path, we'll go to a completely different level of consciousness and a whole series of wonderful scientific breakthroughs. And if we go the other way, we'll essentially be propelling ourselves into a long-term purgatory run by a lot of perverts who don't want to do anything except maintain the status quo and have total control over our nation.
Well, yeah, the whole planet actually is the ultimate goal. You touched on a couple of things that I'd like to comment on briefly. First of all, I agree with you in terms of the technology. And, you know, the general told us that he would come back and he was going to see if he could bring one of the elders to speak to us. So you can imagine what we're going to have to talk about on that show. We are not going to be laying the groundwork anymore. It'll be time to move on. And that's hand in hand with what you're talking about. You see, you're discerning if the flow of information stops or the inspiration is sort of becoming stagnant or stale. And I certainly know that feeling. I encounter that all the time with music. But what I go back to is exercises or the fundamentals of technique, and the inspirational doors open right back up. And I'm sure that, you know, when you were describing working out calculations and looking at these scientific laws that are becoming apparently limited to you, you're doing the same thing with your creativity in going back to those fundamentals or examining those things from a different perspective. I do the same thing. In fact, I wanted to ask you if you have been experiencing in the last week or two the phenomenon of feeling like wherever you go outside yourself for information seems like a hamster wheel, and that you're finding yourself going inside.
Let me address that, because you just prime the pump for something really, really fascinating, which I would like to mention.
Okay.
As you know, I've been involved in alternative energy stuff for 42 years, literally, which is a pretty good segment of my life. And in the very, I'd say the first two-thirds of it was a total struggle, because I was educated in the same system that everybody else is, and my engineering pursuits were certainly modified by the traditional restraints that teach us not only the material, but how to think about the material. So, obviously, when you get into a situation where you're looking for some kind of an advantage, where there isn't supposed to be one, it becomes very difficult to navigate, because all the tools that you have keep on turning you back onto the existing paradigm. And, of course, that makes perfect sense, because it's the embracing of the paradigm that molds the thinking that keeps you in the paradigm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, anyway, recently some people that I'm associated with had asked me if I'd be kind enough to actually take on the task of interfacing with some normal engineering professors who, I might add, have PhDs and who are associated with some pretty renowned schools. And I said, well, I said, I'll do it if there's a reason to do it. I said, I'm not interested in just having endless debates because I already know how they think and I already know, you know, where that will lead. But at any rate, I engaged in this procedure, and to be honest with you, the reason for doing it was to isolate some individuals that might be capable of following some of this out-of-the-box thinking, without necessarily creating a lot of commotion for anybody.
Yeah.
Well, the most amazing thing that occurred as a result of this exchange had to do with some really subtle points, which are really the hinge pins of the entire concept of electrodynamics. And the amazing thing is that even though I didn't really want to do this initially, once I got into it, not only did I kind of enjoy it, but the interesting thing was that there was a reward embedded in this effort. And it wasn't anything really profound from the standpoint of a sudden illumination or a quantum leap in technology or anything like that. What it was the fact that these, I wouldn't even call them arguments, I would call them debates almost, these scientific debates about these delicate points of interpretation. And where it led was to an understanding of what it is that they think is the determining factor that limits any form of, and I hate to use this term, but I'm going to do it because I don't know any other way to explain what I'm talking about, any form or expression of overunity, which means some kind of a work advantage associated with electrical machinery. And the amazing thing is that we reached this point as a result of very carefully regulated exchanges about our own points of view on where this thinking should lead or could lead. And the interesting thing is we both wound up at the same place, and when we got there, the traditional scientific mind said, this area represents the mechanism that allows one form of energy to be turned into another. And when I got to that same place with them, I said, wait a minute. What you're talking about is the very secret that allows you to have a gain in the amount of work that you can harvest from one of these machines. And so it was an amazing thing that we were actually finally focused on a particular mathematical and physical arrangement that was interpreted in two different ways, even though we were both looking at the same data. And so I realized that somehow my own thinking has been different for so many years that I instinctively realized that this particular area is literally an impedance to progress, And the traditional thinking is that this particular area is the most valuable thing to understand because it allows energy to be changed from one form to another. And I really, it's a very difficult thing to talk about, especially on the air, only because it's one of those things where if we really got into it, I would just be speaking in equations because, you know, the facts are very obtuse. But the point I'm trying to make is that the nugget of gold that I got out of it was an insight into the traditional PhD mind that allowed me to see where the limitation was that they couldn't get beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is they keep referring to conservation of energy as the main issue. But actually, energy doesn't have anything to do with it. It's
well,
amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And they're putting a limit on it from the beginning. I mean, before they get started when they think from that approach.
Well, and not only that, but that limit follows through the entire argument and winds up, when you're confronted with it, you don't realize it consciously, but it follows through from the thinking all the way from the very beginning of the subject, to where you...
Go ahead, Jim, go ahead.
To where you wind up. And so it turns out to be essentially a point of view, but it's modeled on a certain type of thinking and a certain way of looking at engineering problems, and it really, really tempts me to ask the question, you know, is this a fluke that has occurred simply because of the way these technologies have evolved on Earth, or was it deliberately set up this way by tampering with certain mathematical and physical concepts that were just beginning to come to light in Tesla's time period, and somebody realized that by just making some very subtle changes in thinking and analysis and analytical procedure, that you can essentially entrap an entire century of thinking into a more primitive belief structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's an amazing thought to think about.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't have the answer exactly, but it still makes you wonder.
Well, what you said, and I think I can define that in terms of metaphysics, and I think it would make sense to you or anyone of a scientific bent, that as long as they're thinking like you're thinking, or, you know, and that's, you know, from the heart, you're sensing these things on a much higher level. It's all directly related to a very fundamental principle. And in metaphysics, I could describe it simply as a person doing something instead of sitting on their duff, actually taking responsibility and doing something, which puts them in a place where everyone who is not doing anything or everyone who is not doing that particular thing is not going to have as an experience, and therefore they're not going to be able to have a raising of their consciousness and the wisdom that comes with that, or the awareness that comes with that. And so to justify their laziness or their apathy or their belief system, their closed-mindedness, they attack what you do and the principles on which what you do is founded, or the things you do are founded, that your inventions and your analysis of these older systems that go back to Tesla's time but have really not been utilized properly, either as Tesla actually intended them to be used, or in light of the fact that he probably left a few steps out just for safeguarding the misuse, preventing the misuse of those inventions. And all they have done with them primarily is misuse them, use them to harm people. They delight in that lower vibration, using high technology to produce negative effects at the lower end of the vibrational scale, so to speak. And these technologies that they're using, like HARP and the DARPA system Lord knows what else. The things that they're doing with microwave technology and implants and RFID chips and all of these things. And the nanotechnology. They're putting the nanotechnology in vaccines. There's no doubt about that. That's their intention. And that will wreak havoc with people. And it's the solution, the point I want to make here is the solution is very simple. In that case, you say, no, and then it's over. All you have to do is say no. I will not do that. Okay? Now, that's taking responsibility of your life into your own hands at that point. Because their intention is to do us harm anyway. So why would anyone in their right mind allow them to do you harm? It makes no sense. And go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
I understand completely what you mean by taking the bull by the horns and being responsible for your own actions. I mean, let's face it. When I was 19, I sure as heck didn't have any assurance that the path I was starting down would lead me to anything worthwhile. And I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would be in my 60s by the time I started to see meaningful things happen as a result of my efforts. But I kept following my instincts and following the urges of my higher self. And I did so with the realization that wherever it led me, I was going to find out, you know, something genuine, something interesting. Now, of course, I always realized that in the long run, I could make a total ass of myself, too. I mean, that's a real distinct possibility, because there's no guarantee that what I'm going to do is going to bear fruit. But the urge is so powerful for me to continue the investigation and to follow these instincts and to look for new knowledge, you know, that I'm not concerned about that. Because even if I fall flat on my face with these efforts, the mere fact that I'm at least taking the initiative to try is a worthwhile thing in itself, not only for my spiritual development, but to impart an attitude, a worthwhile attitude, to other people. And the thing that concerns me about some of these high and lofty PhDs is certainly not what they know, because some of them are not only wonderful human beings, but they're genuinely masters of what they do know. And I would never contest that. I admire them for it. The problem comes when you reach a certain area that sends up a red flag in their minds. Now, very, very rarely you'll meet somebody who will say, now that's an interesting idea. I mean, it may not even go beyond that, but at least to hear that is pretty amazing. More than usually, however, you'll get the opposite result. There was one guy, naturally I'm not going to mention any names, but he's a pretty prominent individual. And when we reached this point that I was trying to describe earlier, and I said to him, I said, okay, look, I recognize what you're saying, but I said, use your imagination for a minute. Supposing we invert your interpretation and this particular quantity in this equation either goes away entirely, becomes a negative number, or at the very least is completely reduced to a smaller quantity. what do you think would happen? And there was this long pause, and honestly, the guy started using four-letter words. He switched from being a rational, patient, somewhat egotistical human being who was trying to hold a particular position and explain to me in a fatherly manner why I should come around to the other point of view. And when I forced him to think about that particular change, it was just like somebody threw a switch. And he let out this incredible series of strings of curse words and whatnot and said, there's no way I'll be associated with someone who thinks like you. And he hung up. But he actually used four-letter words. Now, of course, I've heard them all my life. It's not a surprise that they're on his vocabulary. But I didn't expect a scientific conversation to terminate in that type of an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes to show you that there's something that happens when you reach these areas. As soon as somebody realizes on a conscious level that a paradigm that they have embraced is about to be fractured, then
yeah,
all of a sudden the thinking stops and the emotions begin. It's really weird.
Well, it's sort of like having a sandcastle covered with a glass house. You know, whatever can cause the glass house to shatter is definitely going to aid in bringing down the sandcastle. You know what was going through my mind while you were describing this, and I'm recalling the conversation that we shared on May 29th. And you were told that your work is being monitored by a federation of 574 planets. By the way, I don't know if you're aware of this, but we'll add this, and those that know, and those that don't want to know can think what they want. They can derive whatever conclusion they choose. This show is piped up to 2,000 planets. I say up to, including 2,000 planets in our galaxy. So it's being heard over a wide area. Now, why were you chosen? It was mentioned you were chosen. Your work was being looked at. Even your character was being looked at. And so you are in a privileged place. And I wouldn't really, I'm not counseling you. I'm just reacting to what you described. I wouldn't waste my time with those people. You may very well feel that way now anyway. In trying to educate them, they're not ready. They're not willing to be educated. After all, they have doctorates, right? And you know my saying about the PhDs, and this is not all PhDs, but, you know, it can stand for piled higher and deeper. You know, they have a belief system, and you were about to shatter it. Okay, so the person goes into denial and they become irrational and they become even violent. That's how closed-minded they are. That's exactly what I'm talking about when I mentioned this phenomenon 10 or 15 minutes ago, asking you if you had been feeling this, and you, of course, you're experiencing it with people. But let's say while I'm doing my research, I'm finding that at least until I take that pause that you were describing and find something else constructive. I don't mean just lying around doing nothing and vegetating. I'm speaking about redirecting the energy, focusing it in another direction. And so I did that with music. And I actually got into programming synthesizer sounds from scratch. You know, things that I'm creating on the spot. Sounds that people haven't heard before. And I know they haven't heard them because they're not existing in the manner in which I'm constructing them. Okay? And I played these for a few people, and they were really surprised by what they heard. It had a consciousness opening effect on them. It got them visualizing things and thinking things. And when I paused from doing that, I got to a point where I thought, okay, now what do I choose to do? And I went back into my research, and boy, did I hit pay dirt. In other words, I just let go of it, you see, and it's that process sometimes of letting go when you allow the information to just flow through you, you see. It's almost like when we're thinking about it too hard, we're focusing our attention on it, or when we're believing in it, because it's real easy to get pulled back into the matrix, you know, and you and I have talked about that, you know, till the cows came home and went back out to pasture. I asked you, you know, and that was a great response you gave, because you're applying it directly to what you do, how you earn your living and what your life is about. And I would add one more point too, and I think the listening audience will appreciate this. I know for a fact that there are thousands of people in space praying for us. And I get a lot of people asking me, why doesn't the Galactic Federation come in and clean up this mess? That's why we are here. That's the reason we're here. It's our responsibility. And we have...
Well, I actually asked the guy that. Remember, I said, is there a prime directive and do you honor it?
Yeah.
And they said, there is, and we do, unless it gets too far out of balance, and then we have to do a little house cleaning. But I agree with you. I think it's the people of Earth that have to bear the responsibility of cleaning up. And quite frankly, it's the fact that we have gotten out of the habit of doing this that has let things get so far out of hand. I mean... Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, you know, I grew up on a steady diet of Hopalong Cassidy, Roy Rogers, John Wayne. You know, all of my heroes were cowboys, you might say. And maybe that's naive, you know, in view of today's approach to life. But the thing that's good about it is that the good guys come in, and when things get a little bit too far off the beaten path, they take out their six guns, they clean house, and then they ride off into the sunset until they're needed again. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. How did we ever get to the point of believing that, oh, we mustn't make waves, oh, we could get in trouble, oh, you know, there are other people who are supposed to do that, a savior will come, all this nonsense. We have to do it. And the fact that we've embraced this wait-and-see attitude when we know darn well that this country is being attacked from a moral point of view, and has been since the 50s, you know, how much more do you need to have happen? Are we actually going to wait until we have to bow down in front of King Obama before we start to realize that something's a little askew?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of which, this is an important point. This was brought to my attention by my publisher and editor, Don Harkins, at the Idaho Observer. I don't watch much TV, and if I flip something on, it's just to hear what they're talking about to get sort of a gauge on where they're heading their next disinformation campaign. And I was notified that there was an interview with Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is now the self-admitted handler of Barack Obama. You know, he uses the word advisor, but I use the word handler. I think it fully describes what his role is. And, you know, Obama's taking orders from all kinds of people, but the media presents this image of him, you know, being this unique, powerful individual. And Brzezinski supposedly, on one of the Sunday morning news hours, let's say, where they, you know, they'll interview Colin Powell or Dick Cheney or somebody like that, they interviewed Brzezinski, and he said that Obama had been chosen or picked and groomed at the age of 8. At the age of 8, they had chosen him. Now, that's, you hear nothing like that in the stories they tell us. Okay? Certainly nothing like that in Obama's book. But this was on mainstream TV. And they have become so arrogant and brazen with what they do. They put it right out in front of your face and literally tell you something that contradicts everything else that has been said. And those in the know that there's a connection in Indonesia and Malaysia, as well as Russia, as far as where Obama was in his early years, and even up to the age of 30, he was still in that environment. Now, they've painted these pictures of him being born in Hawaii and being born in Kenya. It's one place or the other. They made up the name of the hospital, but the hospital doesn't have any record as such. They sealed the records. Now they have the ruse that North Korea might attack us. So they're surrounding Hawaii with ships under the pretense that the Korea is going to attack Hawaii. We're going to have another Pearl Harbor event. And I'm going to proclaim that the intention is probably to protect those sealed birth records of Obama, that they don't want the missiles to destroy those. So, I mean, you know, this is a farce being played on the people, Jim. You can see that. I mean, just this disclosure. Were you aware of that, that he had been chosen at the age of 8?
No, I wasn't personally aware of it, but, you know, I've already accepted a long time ago that the whole thing stinks. So, you know, I have things that are much better to do than to waste any more energy, you know, on that subject. I already know that there's something wrong with the picture. Now, what's going to come out of the woodwork from that point on just wouldn't surprise me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's left up to your type of research more so than mine.
Yeah. Well,
God bless you for being able to dredge out these little facts, you know.
And in light of that, now the mainstream very slightly is starting to hint that there's something corrupt in these areas where I've been describing it. Now, we have the president of change, people. Okay? What has he changed? He has put us many more trillions of dollars in debt as a nation. That is, if we buy into their system, you see? Because we can say no to that system. We have to start standing up and speaking like men and women. And stop leaving this up to the children to decide. Because if you know what? They could probably handle this problem a lot easier than the adults. Because people are so brainwashed. By and large. The majority are so out of the loop. And you described a perfect example. You're talking science with scientists, and they completely lose it. As if you told them 9/11 was an inside job. Or that there was an intended strike, nuclear strike on 7 cities back in January, which we talked about on this show and a few others, which stopped the events. But because something happened, people then say, well, it is probably just a rumor or something. That's what they're hoping you think, you see. They're getting ready to plan another event, though, and they'll do it on many fronts just to create chaos, then declare martial law, shut down the banks, steal all the money, and start over from scratch. only with a 100% slave society. And it's pretty darn close. It's probably around 98% now.
It's just the interesting thing too is that, you know, I keep hearing from my associates in China that the rest of the world has already gone on to engineer a true wealth-based form of finance, and that actually the U.S. Below the scenes has actually gone ahead and printed up additional money just in case they're forced to go that way, and these are treasury bills as opposed to FRNs, and that they're already distributed to the major areas of the country, and they're just being quietly held there. So they're actually poised themselves to be able to go either way.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't surprise me because, you know, they're such wishy-washy, spineless individuals. But the point is that we, the people, have to make this decision. And nobody else is going to do it. Now, you want a good example of what solidarity is really all about? Look at what's going on in Iran.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Do you see one or two people complaining? No, I see hundreds of thousands of people complaining. You want to get some kind of an interesting result? Just imagine that going on in Washington or New York City or both. You know, now you start to get somebody's attention. If you're going to cower in the corner, believe me, they're going to come and throw a net over you. It's only a question of when.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been through this countless times, too, haven't we?
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about it. Why do you think they don't teach history anymore? They don't want you to remember. This is just a replay, folks. You know, this thing that they're trying to pull off here has its roots all the way back in the Roman Empire. As a matter of fact, if you even look at the symbol of ancient Rome, it happened to be an eagle. You think that's a coincidence?
Well, I think you could even go back to, the days of the pharaohs in Egypt, couldn't you?
You could go all the way back before that.
Yeah, which brings
it's
up
been,
another...
It's been going on.
Yeah, another point now. Now, you have a guy who tells the world he's a Christian. He talks about his Christian faith in his book. Yet his friends were Muslims. Now I'm not deriding those people, okay? But don't say you're a Christian and you're a Muslim, and you've been brought up under atheism. Google the name Tom Fife, F-I-F-E, Tom Fife. Google that. There's an article that he wrote that was published some months ago. I think it's called the First Time I Heard About Barack. I think that's the title. The First Time I Heard About Barack. He describes having been a software engineer. He went to Moscow to work with some scientists there in the computer industry, and they were going to co-produce a software product. And while he was a guest with some real important people, these were really high-rate scientists, the wife of the scientist began telling him the story of the upcoming black president that we were going to have. And she told the story of the father from Kenya, which I've disproven, and the mother from Kansas, and that he was born in Hawaii, which is, I've disproven all of that as well, you know. So it's the spin story that she's telling, but she knew the name Barack, and she just referred to him as Barack. Not Barack Obama, just Barack. But he was being trained for this position. So now we have two stories describing this, and actually Tom Fife's came out, I would almost bet that they heard this show and decided that they had to have Brzezinski come on and make some kind of comment like that to try to preempt my research and my comments. And I don't say that out of any egotism. I just say, you know, because they did something like that before when I talked about his Jewish background. They had Barbara Walters come on the next day on The View and echo my comments. But it's Barbara Walters delivering it, you know, on mainstream, on ABC, afternoon television. So that makes it official that she said it, you see. It's supposed to take the sting out of the truth, you see. It's supposed to minimize the truth, and they bring it out in such a subtle way. And a lot of people said, oh, I watched that show. I didn't hear him say that. People don't hear. They're not listening, you see. They're waiting for something to grab them that fits that matrix, that belief system, and if it's not that, they totally shut down. Or in your experience, they start cussing at you. Sorry to take so much of the time, but wanted to make that point.
Well, let me just make one final point, referring back to what I was discussing. I think that what came out of it, which is really worthwhile, you know, if you want to discuss higher octaves of energy conversion or energy efficiency, and you talk about it in total generalities, there's just so many areas where there can be arguments and where there can be misunderstandings or different points of view, that it really becomes a hopeless task. But what this last 2 weeks has accomplished for me is, by talking with these individuals who are experts in their field, they have helped me focus on the very area that needs to be exposed and clarified as having two meanings, depending upon your interpretation, because if that can be done intelligently and succinctly presented, at least some people are going to be able to say, aha. They're not all going to say, oh, nonsense. There's going to be some people that will catch on. So rather than talk about this enormously complex area that has millions of facets that can be argued about, at least I know where to focus a lot of the effort.
Mm-hmm.
So something good came out of it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, in spite of all this stuff we're talking about, let's just say that there are things moving in our direction. I know that more people are waking up. Let's give credit where credit is due. I mean, we can complain and rant about those that aren't waking up, but you're not going to get those kinds of numbers because those people are sleeping. Okay? But I'm comparing to the images that we saw of what's going on in Iran. The streets, as far as you can see, are filled with people. And they made sure that when they had the current Ayatollah, who is the supreme leader of the country, being a religious leader, basically explain away the thought of any corruption, that there was no corruption in the vote, and we don't know that there was or there wasn't. The point is, we're not taking care of our business. You see, they want our attention focused elsewhere. Because when they have our attention focused elsewhere, we're not paying attention to the very things we should be paying attention to. So now you have that problem compounding the one you described earlier, where the person just can't think outside the box or is not receptive to new information. They've learned it. They've got their degree. There's nothing more they can, you know, they can be taught. The pot's filled to the top. And don't put any heat under it because it'll boil over and make them uncomfortable, you see. Not realizing that it's not even half full and more than half empty.
Well, you know, the irony of it is, a PhD is a wonderful thing to have. I wish I had one sometimes, but the real thing that I think all of these experts forget is the lesson to be learned from a star-filled night. There isn't a single human being on this planet, or any other planet for that matter, that can stand out on a dark night and look at the cosmos and not realize that he doesn't know a damn thing. And I think that's an exercise that we should all engage in very routinely, because it knocks you off your high horse. And the reason I mention that is not because I have any disdain for people with doctorate degrees. As a matter of fact, I admire them. But what I don't like is the belief that they are now demigods and everything in their field has been conquered. It's ridiculous.
Well,
I don't care what subject you pick. Anyone. I don't care what field it's in or what it represents. All you've got to do is dig into it just a little bit, and you find out it's really an endless subject.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really knows anything.
Yeah, but getting them to admit that is the problem. And those are the people teaching everyone else, you see. That's the hierarchy of the educational system telling you, you know, I'm a professor. I have this piece of paper. I have this certificate or this license, and I'm respected. I have these accreditations, these awards. And they don't mean squat if you can't make use of that. It doesn't represent knowledge. It represents playing the game. Forking out the money for the classes, going through the routine the way they require it. You see, they set up the curriculum. There's a reason why they set it up. What kind of education would you get if you were the type, or just flat out, okay, you pay this much money and you get to choose what you learn? Think of the education you could get, but then be taught by someone competent in that area, someone with an open mind. What would it do to the educational system overnight to open up people's inner creativity? But no, they want molds, you know. You might as well be working or be in a bin in a dye factory. Or some kind of a mold factory, because all they want is replicates, you see. They're not looking for individuality and creativity. That moves us to a higher plane, and they can't control us. So the point is, we've got to take responsibility. We do. We have to acknowledge it and take the responsibility and trust that there is a God, despite what we're told. Doesn't anyone notice how God is being pushed aside in everything? How long do you think God is going to stand for that? I'm not asking you to start preaching, but, you know, certainly respond.
We've talked about, we've had two or three complete shows about that very subject, and how even the consciousness of the planet has more respect for its creator than we do. And I don't think God has to come down and start throwing lightning bolts around. I think that just the way the universe is set up and the higher octaves of forces and consciousness that already exist, when things just get a little bit too out of hand, they take care of it. You know, there's a consciousness associated with the whole planet. It's only going to let it go so far. The planet doesn't want to be destroyed. The planet wants to fulfill what it was created for. It's only us that have strayed so far off the path that we don't even know what the heck we are. That's pretty amazing when you stop to think of it. You can go out in the woods and get a pheasant or a deer or probably even an earthworm, and at least they know what they're supposed to do. And they don't have PhDs.
They should have them. You know, especially the worms. I mean, if snakes can have them, why can't worms have them?
Well, you know, on a serious note, though, I will say this. There's an old adage that I've always been fond of, and it goes something like this. I don't remember the exact wordage, but it's like the night always looks darker when you have a bonfire roaring instead of a little campfire. And the explanation of it is that if the fire is very, very small, you know, it lights up your immediate area and gives you a certain amount of warmth and comfort and a feeling of security, and that's fine. But when you build a huge bonfire that maybe took you all day to accumulate the fuel for it, and when it's roaring in the middle of the darkness of night, and you realize that despite its huge size, it hasn't dispelled the darkness, that's a very disquieting realization. And the reason that I bring that up is because I think, whether it's conscious or subconscious, that people who spend 16 to 20 years getting an education in the field of their choice, they know a heck of a lot. There's no question about that. But they are like the big bonfire. And I think that a lot of them realize, because of what they do know, that they know nothing. And that can have a very twofold effect upon you. If you're a certain individual, it's going to humble you and make you realize that 1,000 lifetimes of study wouldn't put you in much better position. You'd know more, but you'd still know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The other variety of individual, when they reach that plateau, is going to have a very introverted reaction, and they're going to say, I can't tolerate this. I can't cope with the fact that I've invested 20 years of my life obtaining this license that says I'm smart, and I don't know anything. So what I'm going to do is fold in on myself and create this protective bubble and convince myself that I know it all.
Yeah, and I have to defend what I know at all costs.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the reason why there's an emotional discharge when you start to prick that protective bubble. It's because they've spent years erecting it for their own emotional stability and protection. And that's a shame that reflex exists, because it interferes with the true prime objective, which is the realization of the immensity of the universe and the endlessness of the divine mind. That's mm-hmm. what we should all be aspiring towards. How can you be afraid of it, you know? You need to admire it and always keep its true image and its immensity before you.
Well,
because when you do that, it attracts you.
Oh, go ahead.
When you do that, it mm-hmm. attracts you into it. The other way, you cower away from it. And that's not what God wants.
When we heard that the Galactic Federation was praying for us, and that I brought that point up when I was asked what they're doing to help us. They're not here to interfere, but why would they pray for us? I mean, if you ask that question, people who can move light years away from this planet or come from light years away to this planet with their technology. And it was described on the 29th as some of the leadership is over 500 years old. You think they don't know some things about themselves and about what health is about, healthy living. And you've got to ask yourself, why would they resort to prayer with all of this technology, with all of this intelligence and wisdom and awareness? Why would they pray? What is it about prayer that is effective that they would spend their time doing that? You see, when we put out a low vibration, we affect the whole that way. We bring the whole of society down with us. When we close our minds to advances in technology, advances in power systems, for example, which they argue as energy, and I know your thoughts, you've made that very clear. The energy's there. It can be transformed, but the goal is to produce power with it, to accomplish tasks. And so why would a self-proclaiming entity like a government that goes into space deny that anything else exists in space? Why would they deny that? Why would they lie to us about energy? Why would they lie to us about our abundance, whether we have it or whether we don't, or the meaning of laws? Why would they misrepresent everything to us? And why would those people that support that system start cussing at you when you attempt to expand their consciousness? You see, prayer can overcome that, or it can empower those that are aligned with helping the universe. Those that are on a path of destruction are going to, in the end, destroy themselves. They will eventually become responsible for what they do. And we've got to wrap, but I want to leave the last comment with you, Jim.
Well, I was so focused on what you were saying that I'm almost at a loss to create a final statement. But since you were talking about prayer, let me go in that direction. I was raised in a Catholic family, and when I was a kid, I was taught that prayer was the continuous recital of these interesting little formulas like the Lord's Prayer and the Hail Mary and the Glory Be and all of those things. But later, when I started investigating the higher octaves of life, I did learn that the real mechanism of prayer is out-picturing to the universe an image of what it is that you're trying to accomplish or what it is that you need, or even if it's just a prayer of gratitude where you're saying, you're expressing your appreciation for the magnificence of the universe and the brilliance of the God that made it all. There are no words required for that. You create an image in your mind and you release it like a smoke ring or a bubble. And with that, the force that propels it is your awe, is your gratitude, is your love for the divine. So as long as we want to pray, we should use the mechanism that God used and the language that God used, which is, the power of his own mind and the fact that all the universe is a hologram, including us. So this idea of picturing and propelling that picture with our true feelings is the best mechanism for prayer, in my opinion. Of course, there may be better ones. And the good thing about that is that mechanism, the reason why I embrace it is because it has been shown that the utilization of that mechanism is what brings about healings and which brings about miraculous transformations in our own sphere. And so if you really want to send the message to God, I can't imagine a better mechanism to utilize than the one that he used when he created us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the things you're describing to put behind that imagery is your emotion. It's prayer with emotion and genuine emotion. Yes. Well, Jim, it's been fascinating. I could go on for a couple more hours, but we would lose our engineer, and we appreciate his patience as we wrap this up. It's been very interesting, and I want to thank you for all the profound statements that you had to make and sharing some of your personal experiences with us. And, you know, I wish you continued success and progress in your work. And let's thank the United Galactic Federation for their thoughts and their prayers, and wish them a safe journey and a successful mission in the work that they're doing.
Absolutely.
Okay, folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. And our special guest, Jim Murray, I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. Visit my website at DirectLightProductions.com. If you'd like to see that documentary of the call from space on May the 29th. And that was a Friday night. Tonight's guest was on that call also. That was hour two of a show that was supposed to end after 1 hour. there are some news items there that you might want to look at. Try to step outside the box this weekend. We've got some great shows coming up next week, and a surprise guest coming up on Monday. I'm sure you're going to enjoy some of the things that he is going to bring to the table. And in the meantime, special thanks go out to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible here on BBSRadio.com. I also would like to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, all the people that are broadcasting the show around the world, especially Larissa and Doug. I'm aware that you're picking up the show tonight. And anyone else that I'm not aware of, we appreciate your tuning into the show. Also, you can get the archives off of bbsradio.com. And as I mentioned, we're going to be setting up something where you can get the archives to this show directly through me. If you choose not to subscribe to the whole network, we're going to have a special for you that you can do that. Even some CDs with a whole bunch of archives compiled onto one CD. So you'll have many, many days of listening pleasure and educational information. So I wish everyone out there in the listening audience a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.